need a break? Relax, grab a coffee, and join the conversation with Mariska on Two Sugars.
Knowing what you're thinking and hearing how your day's been. Do you think you can tell me everything, darling, but leave out every part about him? Right now you're probably by the ocean while I'm still out here in the rain. With every day that passes by since we've spoken, like Glasgow gets farther from LA. Maybe it's supposed to be this way, but oh my love, I wanna say I miss the green in your eyes. And when I said we could be friends, guess I lied. I wanna say I wish that you never left. Oh, but instead I only wish you the best. Can't help but notice you seem happier than ever now. And I guess that I should tell you I'm sorry. It seems I was the problem somehow. Maybe I only brought you down, but oh. It's something I really mean, that I want you happy where the north is with me. I wanna say I wish that you never left. Oh, but instead I only wish you the best.
Hey, great to have you company this Wednesday afternoon. What a great song that was from Lewis Capaldi. Wish you the best. Hey, you're putting up with me this week as Irene is AWOL. Actually, no, she's not AWOL. She is off these fair shores somewhere around the world for a few weeks or so. So I've decided in her absence, I'm going to tell you all about my PhD. Now, I know that we have mentioned this over the years, but I don't know if I've really kind of talked about it. So I thought, right, this is my opportunity now that it's all over and finished, that I just share a little bit about what my PhD was about. So firstly, doing a PhD, yep, it is a big undertaking. It took me just over four years, but, you know, it's a study. That's what it is. It's research. It's a big study into something, and it has to be a study into something you're passionate about. If any of you are thinking about doing a PhD out there, you must be passionate about your subject. That is so important. And I'm sure that's the only reason why we all start a PhD is because we're so passionate about something. We want to know everything about that and whether there's new things that could come from our thinking. As soon as you lose your passion, then, yeah, it's a challenge. It may become quite a chore. You may begin to regret that you even started it and not even finish it. So be passionate and remind yourself, continuously remind yourself why you decided to take that journey. So I did my PhD with the University of Otago. I'm up here in Auckland. So I used to pop down every so often and that was nice actually, heading down there. Now, one of the first, I suppose, little training sessions that I went to, I remember one of the trainers in there saying to us, it's not a lonely journey. It is only you who makes it a lonely journey. And I remembered that, and I'm glad that actually I heard that, because they're absolutely right. If it is a lonely journey, you've made it the lonely journey. You need to surround yourself with people, you know, that will support you. And they may support you in very, very different ways. I'm so excited to tell you that one of my support people was our Two Sugars sister, Cara, who, remember, she's down in Oamaru. So it was lovely when I'd go down to Dunedin and I'd pop over to Oamaru as well. Now, Cara was a great brainstorming buddy for me. She was also just support and positive support when I needed it. And so much so, she was there with me right at the end in my oral exam, pulling faces at me behind the, no, not at all. No, she was just smiling and encouraging me still right in that last moment. Yes, there will be ups and downs, but, and again, you know, sometimes when people just say little things to you, they make so much sense and you kind of go, oh, I needed that. And it was one of my supervisors that once reminded me that while I was doing this, I was the apprentice. I wasn't expected to know everything. So just ask and don't be afraid to ask. I think that was so, so important. Just ask. So what was my PhD on and why did I even start it? So my PhD, I looked at international doctors coming into New Zealand and I wanted to identify and understand the cultural challenges that they experienced and whether that had an impact to whether they stayed in New Zealand. And why did I even start this journey? Well, I have, for probably the last 15 years or so, had a contract with DHB and been part of a team in researching, creating, and delivering training courses around cross-cultural competency all around New Zealand. And it was within these courses that many migrant practitioners had shared their experiences of the challenges that they had experienced coming into New Zealand. And sometimes there was tears, you know, but the more and more I heard these experiences, I thought, well, why can't we do something about this? Why do they have to go through some of the things that they, you know, experiences that they were sharing with me? So naively, I thought, I'll just do a PhD so it can become formal and we can do something about that. And yes, that was rather naive of me. But man, what a journey. It's just been an amazing journey. So I'm just going to share just a little bit this afternoon in regards to one of the common themes or one of the, theories that I identified to try and understand there's some common themes that were coming out. So it was this common theme of the different cultural challenges that led me to identify what a theory called cross-cultural code switching. And this was a way to explain what was happening. Now, don't worry, it sounds all a bit big, but it's actually not. It makes sense as I explain this. So we have to acknowledge that here in New Zealand, we need doctors. So if we need them, why, you know, we should have, we have some responsibility of helping them kind of fit in. And to me, I believe we must improve cultural integration practices or we are going to lose them because it's too tough. So what is cross-cultural code switching? Let me start with code switching. So it's when you adjust your behaviour to fit in or to be effective in the situation or context you find yourself in. We all do it. You know, we're not the same person sitting where you are right now or with your family, your friends, or in front of your manager. So we kind of switch our behaviour to suit the situation. Now, when we talk about cross-cultural code switching, it's when you find yourself in a place which has a different culture to yourself. And so you're not just switching to the context or situation, you're switching to a whole new culture. And so you need to adapt to that particular culture to be able to work effectively in there, to fit in. So their norms, their way of doing things. Now, cross-cultural code switching was identified by a chap called Andy Milinsky. Well, I say a chap. He's probably actually a professor, to be fair. So he took kind of code switching further and tried to understand it in that cultural context. And he identified three challenges that came with it as well. And that was authenticity, competence, and resentment. And he explains that when, you know, someone felt the authenticity challenge, what they were expected to adjust to in the new culture was in conflict with that person's internal belief system. So a real kind of being asked to behave in a way that you don't believe maybe is the best way. And you just don't feel good about it. Competence was about not having the skills to interact in a way that's expected. So then again, it's about having to upskill and learn that different way of interacting because you've never had to interact that way. And the resentment challenge was kind of, you know, why should I change? You wanted me, you hired me. And that's normal as well, as you feel like you're losing yourself and you're kind of losing your identity because of all these expected changes. So when we think about cross-cultural code switching, the greater the difference between the new culture and your own culture, the bigger the switch is needed. So it's almost like having to be a different person. And sometimes that means behaving in a way, as I said, that conflicts with your own beliefs. And then you're more likely to experience challenges, a lot of psychological toll that goes with that, you know, that tiredness of having to think all of the time, constantly having to think about the way that you are expected to interact in that new way. I mean, when you think of our doctors, you know, imagine the different health systems. Imagine yourself in another, for our New Zealand, our Kiwis out there, imagine yourself in a country and maybe within their culture or health system, they don't tell the patient their diagnosis. They tell the family and the family, you know, work with it. I mean, imagine having to work in that environment and switching to an almost opposite way of doing things. And then on top of that, having to think all of the time how to act appropriately in that culture. So the mental stress, you know, the tiredness that goes on with the code switching is real. And even think, you know, when you're having to communicate in a language that's not your first language. And as I was doing this research, I remember finding this article and someone was explaining how for them that they couldn't even be their true self because, you know, they were saying how difficult it was to even interject in a conversation because, you know, you take your time to consider your response, your grammatical accuracy, ensuring you have the correct words so you don't make a, you know, you don't embarrass yourself. But by then, the conversation's already moved on. And so subsequently, while learning, you listen, you observe, you keep quiet. So really, you're not your true self. You know, maybe in your own language and culture, there's, you know, extrovert, happy person, you know, but suddenly you find you can't be you in this situation because you don't have all of the tools you need yet to be and behave like that. So as we went through this, we found that, you know, many of the doctors, you know, did experience a huge amount of stress. Some experienced a loss of identity, a loss of confidence even, brought on by the struggle to adjust culturally. And think of it like this, you know, you're a qualified and experienced doctor. And sometimes you're very, very experienced. And, you know, you've come down here to New Zealand and you've found that we do things very differently here. And sometimes it seems that all of that experience you've had is somewhat redundant as things are done so differently. And so, you know, you're now having to relearn how things work around here as well. And it might just be stuff like how you communicate with each other, how you interact with colleagues and patients. You know, you imagine, for example, if you came from a hierarchical culture and health system where you've got a lot of status, whereas here you're suddenly working in a team. You know, you have to earn your respect, where you don't address people by titles. So again, feeling that they've lost their identity as well. So as you kind of think, how can we practice effectively with all of this stuff going on? So within that first adjustment period, there's a lot of kind of changes and trying to figure out how things work. So it's really critical to help our international doctors figure out how things work. I mean, it has a huge impact on their well-being as well. Constantly having to think about how to do things so that you can be accepted in this new society, and thinking that sometimes when you act normally, it may not be so readily accepted here as well. So, you know, as I said, communication, when that switch involves the most basic, you know, day-to-day interaction, like the way we communicate, when you come to New Zealand, many of them found they were constantly having to think about how to soften their communication, how to sugarcoat it, how to beat around the bush, because that's how they found that we communicated. And they were a lot more direct. And this was not so readily accepted. And many of them spoke about the complaints they got or people feeling offended by the directness of their communication. And yet they were just communicating normally, but it's not the norm here in New Zealand. And I remember one doctor sharing with me, you know, they said, I'm very cautious now. I spend a lot of my subconscious energy in controlling what I say. So you're forever thinking, or they're forever having to think about how they say things. And one doctor again shared with me, I've been accused of being aggressive, being unhelpful, being authoritarian, being many things. And I've had to reflect on that. Why has no one told me this before? I'm 46. Nobody has told me this before. So again, they've found themselves in this New Zealand way and their communication is so different that suddenly, you know, people are reacting to that, and that's having an impact on their well-being as well. One thing that also that I found in this study, you know, that despite that they come with a wealth of knowledge, we were like, you're here now, be like us. And so we lost, I think, a lot of that knowledge and experience that they bring because we're so busy saying be like us. But then again, we didn't help them figure out what being like us was like either. Now, you know, to be fair, it is somewhat needed. They do need to adjust to some of the system here, the protocols, the legal obligations. But there's a lot of valuable, valuable knowledge that we did miss, you know, by just not being bothered about tapping into that because we're so busy going to be like us as well. And again, you know, some of the comments shared, you know, it really felt like I had to earn my spurs and show that I was valid and valuable, because I think any international trainee is always going to face that. Are you as good as one of our guys? Well, of course they are. Absolutely. They just do things a little bit differently sometimes as well. But, you know, thinking, I also heard from them, you know, when they're stressed, when they're tired, you know, it was easy to revert back to what was normal for them. So, and remember, everybody's busy. Just because we've got these doctors, it doesn't mean they're no busier than other doctors. So they are hugely busy. And all of our doctors here in New Zealand, you know, tired, stressed all the time because they're so busy, busy, busy. But when you are stressed, when you are tired, you know, it is easy just to do things as you normally would do, because it makes that life a little bit easier. You're not having to think about being somebody else. And so again, complaints would come because they were interacting in a way that wasn't acceptable with that as well. So, one of the interesting interactions actually was the observations of many of the international doctors that I interviewed about working with Māori patients. And it was, I suppose, when I think about it, you know, all of the doctors have to do training. They must attend a training course for caring for Māori patients and awareness of treaty obligations. I don't know, so maybe we're inadvertently having highlighted some of the different expectations around care. But interestingly enough, while they thought they recognised a different way of interacting and a different communication style, some of the values that of our IMGs resonated with our Māori and Pacific culture as well, especially if they came from a family-oriented country. And so they found that commonality there, which was nice and which they could build upon as well. Again, thinking about some of the experience or the lack of support or lack of interest, I suppose, in some of the challenges that the doctors were experiencing, that many of them became quite isolated, you know, and you'd find that where they were in an area where there were other international doctors, they usually got together because they had the same common problem as well. And it was very unfortunate that, you know, as doctors come into New Zealand, they do get a medical supervisor. So they have someone there who ticks them off to ensure that they are medically competent. And part of the role of the medical supervisor is cultural support. But often, in my experience and what I heard, there wasn't a lot of that cultural support that was coming. But unfortunately, also, what we found at IMGs or at the international doctors, there was this perception of a power and, I don't know, perceived power of their supervisors, because obviously they are the ones that could tick them off to say, yes, you are competent. So, this was an unfortunate consequence, because they kind of just became a yes person, because they had to make sure they're here. They, you know, were a long way away. They got that they needed the job. And so, yes, it was just kind of that's what you became. And so behavioural changes were shared, such as agreeing with everything, not asking for clarifications, not adding to the discussion, the fear of saying the wrong thing, not seeking information about the New Zealand system or culture for fear of being perceived as incompetent. And, you know, and I spoke to a New Zealand doctor as well who did do the medical supervision and who agreed, yes, there is a power dynamic and that the supervisor will always be seen as a gatekeeper to their progression. So what I'm suggesting is a cultural mentor, someone that can walk alongside our international doctors in their first year of practice in New Zealand and look after their cultural well-being, helping them understand how things work around here, rather than just leaving them floundering to figure it out for themselves and, you know, waiting for something to go wrong, and then there's complaints. And if we can help them understand how things work around here, they're going to feel a lot more valued for what they bring, respected, and most of all, they're going to hopefully remain. And that's our whole point. So let's help our international doctors be part of New Zealand and value them for what they bring. Well, that's all we've got time for this week. I know I've just gone on and on and on, but we might touch on some more next week, and maybe we'll bring Cara on board and she can talk about the journey that she had from her perspective with my PhD. Hey guys, we'll see you the same time, same place next week.
You've been listening to Two Sugars, brought to you by Delacro Communication, delacro.co.nz.